Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From Postcard from the Past and the award-winning Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is a place where we investigate old picture postcards, their messages, their images, as they take us from banality to heartbreak and back, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads. And we explore what it is that causes us to keep hold of these little cardboard rectangles. Each time, I welcome two guests, and it's their postcards that act as small clues to direct us towards memories, mysteries, and stories. I'm Tom Jackson. I'm delighted to say that today my guests are two writers, Nige Tassel and Gail Renard. Gail and Nige, welcome to Podcast from the Past.
Thank you, Tom.
Now, Gail Renard is a BAFTA award-winning writer, performer, and producer. Her work includes various BBC, ITV, Channel 4 comedy and children's series, as well as books, films, radio and stage plays, including work with an alarming place to be, the world of puppets, Monty and Co. And I suppose what drew my attention to Gail is her book, Give Me a Chance, based on her own true story, how she snuck into John Lennon and Yoko Ono's famous Bed-In for Peace in Montreal to get an interview for her school newspaper. And she'll tell us more, but ended up as the youngest part of the Lennon-Ono entourage for 8 extraordinary days. And Gail joins us today bearing a Montreal postmark.
Oh, yes, very so much.
Still with you?
Yeah, I grew up in Montreal. I live in London, have done since I was 20. But Montreal made me probably who I was, for better or worse.
What's the worse?
Let's start with the positive.
Oh, yes, sorry, I should have said that. What's the better, Gail?
Yes, I'm trying hard here. Montreal, when I grew up, was bilingual, French and English. So although I was English-speaking, I was equally fluent in French. And it's wonderful to have two languages, two cultures.
That's a very real thing, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Well, the bad news is that it became, when I was growing up, like Northern Ireland.
Right.
Because of the separatist movement, who wanted to separate from Canada by violent means. So there were about 200 bombs.
Good Lord.
In a period. And Montreal is a small place, and the English part of it is smaller. So that bit I don't love as much.
Right. Which I could imagine would be a good reason for you to feel sympathy with the peace movement that John Lennon was trying to kick off.
Totally. And that was a little part of the reason he chose Montreal, but also because he wasn't allowed into America.
Right. So just over the border, effectively.
Yeah. It was about 400 or 500 miles from New York City.
Right.
So it meant people could cross over because, of course, no internet.
Yeah.
So people would come physically. And it was very clever of him to have chosen that.
And very fortuitous for you.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I never thought I would, you know, sort of, although I saw the Beatles in concert when I was 10.
Did you?
Yeah, they came to Montreal. And then all touring stopped when the troubles began. So I had seen them and screamed and done all that. But I never expected to be near a Beatle, much less end up being friends with one.
No, who could? Who could ever imagine that, really? Now, Gail, do you still send postcards?
Yes, I do. I love postcards. Very often, as a lot of people do, as thank yous.
Yes.
And I'll include them in letters if I'm sending a script or something like that. Although, when I did it, when my book came out, I had a stack of postcards that I was sending to people with complimentary copies, until my publisher said, "You are using penguin postcards. We are not penguin. Will you please stop that?"
I'm sure all publishing houses see themselves as a great brotherhood, surely.
They didn't.
Unbelievable. You didn't have your own. You should have printed your own.
Exactly. They did give me sort of slips to right. say with that. And I thought, they're not postcards.
Well, you know what to put in your contract for your next book.
Yes.
Very good. Now, Nige Tassel, his work has appeared, I could list a load of newspapers, but all the broadsheets you want to look at, he's written for them. And also various music publications and also football publications. But his books, again, covering often those areas, music and sport, include the latest one, which is Whatever Happened to the C-86 Kids. Now, I imagine listeners will be familiar with the C-86 cassette, which was... You had to send off for it? You had to send off your little cutout coupon, is that right?
That's right, yeah. You had to send... I think it was two coupons in successive issues. It was put out from the NME.
Yeah.
And you had to send a £2.99 postal order, which, if you were a teenager without a bank account, couldn't send a cheque. You'd have to go down to the post office.
Unbelievable.
And get this slip of paper given back to you. Send it out. And it was a compilation that the NME used to put together, a series of cassette tapes, maybe three or four a year, that you would send off mail order-wise. Started in 1981 with one called C-81, with the C representing like a C-90 cassette. So C-81, which was a roundup of music from 1981. And then C-86, 5 years later, yes, was a roundup of all lots of skinny boys with electric guitars who were slightly too young for punk. Maybe their older siblings were into punk.
Yes.
And so they were kind of this... Came out with kind of post-punk indie
fringes.
Era. And yes, very much floppy fringes, stripy T-shirts. you know, God help us if there was a war types, you know, really wouldn't be great in conflict.
I feel very seen with this actually, Nige. Stripy T-shirts and floppy fringes. Unfortunately, this is entirely my era.
It's mine as well, you know. I was slightly too young for punk as well, so I was 17 when this came out.
Oh, yeah.
So this was my sort of time. So you have bands like Primal Scream, the Soup Dragons, Half Man Half Biscuit, The Wedding Present, Age of Chance, all the bands that John Peel was playing on Radio 1.
You're listing the successful ones, of course.
They are the successful ones. The more interesting part, so what I did in the book was go in search of these people who were in their early 20s at the time, now in the late 50s, early 60s, to see, you know, some went on to have huge success, others became driving instructors and teachers and scientists. And hearing those stories is actually more interesting than the ones who did have a taste of rock and roll fame.
Yes, I was trying to describe the book to someone, and to some extent the whole thing is about education interrupted. It's very often these are very bright people who, for some reason, they either give up their studies or avoid studying altogether, go and follow this dream, and then pick up their education later often.
Absolutely. A lot of them go back into education as mature students because at 17, 18, they thought, let's give the band a go. And if I have one regret in my life, it's that I didn't give a band a go.
Oh, no.
I had a band for 2 hours one afternoon. We didn't even come up with a name. That's the thing you're supposed to do first before you even get hold of some instruments. But yes, so people who had education interrupted, and what they were helped by then, as much as John Peel is a guiding light to these bands, so was Margaret Thatcher with the Enterprise Allowance, which meant that you could pretend you were starting a business, i.e. a band, wouldn't have to sign on, you'd just get 50 quid a week for 6 months. I think you had like 6 month checkups that you were on the right path to entrepreneurship with your little tinny indie band. And that was a great time for people then to develop creatively and slowly without the pressures of having to get a job to pay their rent, etc. You know, housing benefit then. You know, these are times that we don't recognise now. But there were fundamental kind of state support that helped the creative industries flourish at the time.
Very good. Well, frankly, if you had a band for 2 hours, I'm surprised you didn't make it onto the compilation. But we'll hear a bit more about your journey as you kind of went around the country looking for balding middle-aged men. Now, you're on the line today. You're not in the studio with me, but you're there. You come with a brand upon you of a zip code 554. Let me just see 55455,
which is anyone who knows anything about zip codes knows that's a very precise part of southeast Minneapolis.
Wow. Okay.
Little neighbourhood butting. It's where the University of Minnesota is, the Minneapolis campus, butts up right against the Mississippi River. And as we'll probably hear later, I didn't do a lot of travelling in my childhood. I didn't take a lot of holidays. But I was an exchange student when I was 21. I went over there sort of first time on an aeroplane. And that was a really great time because I was there to study. I didn't have to do too much.
This is where you landed then? You were in Minneapolis?
So I was in Minneapolis for a year. But as we'll hear later, travelling around a hell of a lot, far more than I was in lecture halls. Right. I was on Amtrak trains doing 20,000 odd miles around the country. That was a better education, quite frankly. Yeah.
Well, it's all education, isn't it? That's the thing.
Exactly, yeah.
Very good. So you weren't hanging around Paisley Park?
I did go past Paisley Park once or twice. The courses I did out there didn't count towards my degree back here, so it was almost like a year off, as long as you do the minimum. I took academic courses in skiing, and the guy who gave me a lift to skiing, he went to school with Prince's drummer. That's pretty much as close.
I used to go
to Prince, and Prince. When I was out there, he opened his club Gland Slam as well, so we went there a few times. But yes, more sort of bands like The Replacements at the time, and the Gear Daddies were my big favourites out there. But yes, really great scene. And being the biggest city between Chicago and Seattle, it meant that every touring band stops in town, so with some great venues. Venues like First Avenue, which was in Prince's film Purple Rain, of course.
Yeah, and have you been back as a responsible adult?
I have, yes. Now, my wife, sort of in the late, towards the end of the 90s, had to go there for a business trip, had to go to a conference.
Brilliant.
So I kind of latched onto her hotel room, just got flight up, and then wandered round. And it doesn't seem any different. A college campus in the sort of late 80s, it's probably very similar to one in the late 70s or one in the late 90s. You know, this kind of uniform of American college kids.
A flow of young people.
All young people, full of the joys of spring and playing frisbee a lot in the sunshine.
Brilliant. There you go. Some things remain, across the ages. Now, Nigel, when did you last send a postcard?
Oh, God, I'm such a poor guest, Tom.
I'll see you later, then.
All your guests have suitcases full of the things.
No. It's not obligatory.
I'm not a sentimental person. I'm not from a sentimental family. I've very few photos of me growing up. Very few. I just haven't collected ephemera. Never been a collector.
Right.
My sister-in-law, attics full of the stuff. She's got an entire garage full of the stuff.
Wow.
But until, when my mum sort of finally departs, I'll probably be handed a box of photos of people I know not who they are. And then when my time's up, I'll probably do the same to my kids, who will have even less idea.
That's funny, because you spend your time trying to draw the connections for other people. Maybe you need to do some more work on yourself.
Well, yes, this is displacement theory, isn't it? I'm busy thinking of other people. It's like people who are builders, their houses are tips, whereas the houses they build are immaculate.
Well,
so I cannot recall when I last sent a postcard. I'm going to say 1996 New Orleans. I'm going to say that we sent one back to my wife's mother. Let's say that.
Very good. And who can disprove it? No one.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very good. Well, look, before we see and hear the cards that Nigel and Gail have brought along. And despite your protestations, you have got cards with you.
I have got I have them for other uses.
Exactly.
Say,
A quick one of mine, and this is a postcard from the past card, like I do on Twitter and in my book. So it's an old card from which I've selected just a part of the message. So let's start with this. This is a card of Clevedon. Clevedon in Avon, is that right?
North Somerset now.
North Somerset,
yes.
That's
literally just down the road from me. It's a good,
there you
good
go.
Choice there, Tom.
Well, you know the windy trees that they have, or they used to have. They still have them. The trees on the front that have blown at an angle.
Yes, I suspect they do. I haven't been down there for a long time.
Well,
they
won't have straightened up. I know that. So this is a card from 1966, I think. A little bit hard to read. A little obscured. Cost threepence to send, and it's a Dennis. produced by Dennis, who publishes from Scarborough. And it shows the front with those trees at an angle and a little bandstand and a woman sitting sort of rather carefully positioned in the foreground as a little bit of interest.
The trees look like a man's toupee flying off in the wind.
There you go. Who writes the comedy around here? Very good, yeah. I'd never seen it like that. It does look like they're being blown there and then, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
The dynamism is real. And this card went to Woking in Surrey. Tell them a little. And it was sent to Mr. and Mrs. Hutchinson, though stupidly or inadvertently, the person who sent it has written Mr. and Mrs. Hutchinson and then had to put in via a little arrow as a sort of superscript. We've all done that. And slightly insulting to get someone's name wrong as well. It's a bit of a pity. And this was a strange... The message just intrigued me, the way these things sometimes do. And it says, Dear PV, some initials, I missed you last Friday. Maybe you thought I'd gone already, but not to worry. I hope to see you when I get back. Also, the hairdresser's father, very keen to meet you. And I was just intrigued about the hairdresser's father. No idea why or who or what, but that piece of information had to be passed on to PV.
I think it sounds a bit Smiley's people.
Yeah, could be. Could be looking at a... but if it was John le Carré, it's not the message. The message is a bluff. It's the picture on the front that sends the secret message. So if it was a religious image, it meant meet soon or something.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the protocol. Do another quick one. This is an image of an interior, a Victorian interior that's been sort of staged for the photo with a rather fancy... A sort of piano that looks like it's part of a sideboard or a sideboard that's got a keyboard.
Harmonium, I think.
Oh, is it a harmonium?
Ah, I was wondering whether it was a pianola, you know, when they play a piano.
Well, that would be nice.
But yes, harmonium sounds good to me.
Yeah, it's more harmonium.
Because it's smaller? Does it have bellows? The harmonium?
Yes, it has. Yeah.
Or do you pump it?
I think, or it's some sort of organ. It's not a player piano.
No, it's not.
I can say now I come from a piano family, so I know.
Fantastic. There we go. No bluffing.
It's got little white buttons above the keyboard as well.
Well, like an organ. Organ stops?
Yeah, like an organ would, yeah.
It's been very ornately done. Just for the listener, it's a sort of riot of patterns in that Victorian, late Victorian kind of style. This card is actually a Victorian parlour reconstructed in the Dundee City Museum. I think it's probably 1973... from the rather faded postmark, sevenpence, sent to Castleford in West Yorkshire. And, this is sent by someone, Leslie Ann. And it says, Dear Grandpa and Grandma, I got this card for you when I went on my school trip. It was smashing. We went camping to Killin and Oban a few days last week, but it rained all the time. Guess what? I haven't been to school because I've got German measles and they have called me Spotty Muldoon. Love from Leslie Ann. And it says, my daddy has bought mummy a new three-piece suite. So there's something for everyone in that one, really.
Illness. That's a lot into a postcard
yes,
there.
Yes, it is, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Not a bad writing lesson, that. Three different subject matter, bang, 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 no mucking about.
I feel we know Leslie Ann now.
Yeah. Unfortunately...
And Spotty Muldoon is a character waiting to have a story written around them, definitely.
Is it a Spike Milligan thing? I think it might be Spotty Muldoon.
Okay,
I think
right.
It might be a... Muldoon sounds very Milligan to me, but I could be wrong. And if anyone knows better, I would definitely like them to contact the podcast. Anyway, I should also remind you, everyone listening... Pictures of these cards are going to be on the blog, which is postcardfromthepast.co.uk. So you'll be able to see the piano that thinks it's a harmonium with organ stops, the trees that look like a toupee being blown away in the wind, and all the other cards we discussed today. Now, Gail and Nige, you've prepared, done your homework, which is really good. Nige, let's start with you, and let's start with your... first card. Shall we start with the promotional card that you've got in front of you? Because it sort of ties in a bit with everything else.
It does, you know, and I've mentioned how we didn't really go do holidays when I was a kid. I'd be dispatched to my grandmother's on the Kent coast. When I did actually write postcards, I would always write one back to my parents. Normally a picture of the Romney Hythe and Dymchurch Railway.
Which excellent choice, close. Yes.
And I wouldn't have been as anywhere half as informative as the one you just read out. You know, it would be, we had chips, played the slot machines, had chips again. Oh. And that would be pretty much the extent of my literary ambitions then. Postcards for me, the ones that I do have, I've tended to collect over the years and use them as wall art. Yes. So my postcards don't have any nice messages on the back. They are purely functional. And the two I've got today both have remnants of blue tack in the corners on the reverse.
Badge of honour.
So they've done service in various kind of home offices.
Brilliant.
Over the years.
Brilliant.
And this one, yes, it's postcard. Not as a means of communication in that it's going to be sent to someone, but in terms of promoting something. So this is a card I collected when I wrote my very first book back in 2013. In fact, it's from a couple of years earlier than that. My first book was a book called Mr. Gig, which found me getting back into live music. I'd moved to the country, we'd had kids. I've got a live music background from early in my life, being a roadie and a promoter and various things. And live music to me seemed to have changed. Suddenly, bands used to go on tour to sell records, and now the other way around. Now, the live circuit was where the money was in the age of the download and the free, you know, everyone getting stuff surreptitiously for free online. So I went off in search of live music in all its forms. One is, you know, not a very credible way, is off to see tribute bands,
yes.
Cover acts. So I went to see a band called The Smiths Indeed, as any detective worth their salt will work out that's a tribute band to The Smiths.
Good work.
This is a postcard. They played the Meet His Murder album, which came out in 1985. So this is 2010 this comes from. It's the 25th anniversary tour, which makes it sound as though they came up with the album themselves.
Yes, but the anniversary is of the record, not of the tribute band.
Not of the band, no, it's the record. Which, and it also, you know, it's got a big star on it. 25th anniversary tour, as though the band had been around that long and they made this record as well. They didn't either. But what this is so you've got the photo on the cover of the album is a very young American soldier in Vietnam. And it's a photo on the actual cover. Here they've done it as an illustration, presumably to get around to copyright, quite deftly. And then we have a list of 23 dates that the band doing in support of this. The interesting thing is it's all Friday and Saturday nights because very few tribute bands, it's not a full-time job. So a lot of them, you know, they're just doing it. They do the regular job. They leave work at 4 o'clock on a Friday,
yes.
Hit down the motorway, you know, and then they're becoming the Smiths, you know. So I went to go and see the Smiths Indeed in Cardiff, had a lovely chat with them and just understanding the motivation for them. And it was great. The rest of the band didn't impersonate the musicians in the Smiths,
right, visually.
But the guy impersonating Morrissey had to be Morrissey.
Yeah,
you know,
suppose
you couldn't
do.
Just do it as a straight. You couldn't just be a straight kind of pub singer doing that. And he was excellent during between songs. He would have Morrissey's inflections and kind of, you know, quips to absolutely down to a T, which is remarkable because his name is Jürgen and he comes from Belgium.
Good lord,
which is brilliant.
That sounds like a Smith lyric.
It does, doesn't
you know,
it?
It's the Buck-toothed
totally
girl
does.
From Luxembourg.
I was a singer called Jürgen from Belgium. Yeah. Sorry.
I'm sure I've heard that.
Appalling impression there, sorry. So this is kind of a memento for me. But also the interesting thing of a flyer for an event or something, which is very ephemeral,
yes,
you know, chucked on pub tables, in record shop doorways, is on a postcard.
Yes.
So no one's going to then chuck that away in the nearest bin. They go, oh, actually, that would look quite good in my kitchen or something.
The sheer aesthetic and quality of it is what gives it life at the time.
Exactly. And then every time you go to the fridge, if you've stuck it with a magnet on the fridge, you're going, oh, God, yeah, I should go and see that band sometime. I've heard good things about them.
Put that ham away. Because meat is murder.
Yes, that carcass of meat. But I think it's a really interesting way, and you know, and for that reason, I've held on to it. You know, I would have, were this just a paper flyer at the time, I would have taken it for research purposes to write that particular chapter, and then probably got rid of it. But the fact that it is, you know, it's a nice illustration, lovely colours on it. And it, you know, from me saying I'm not a sentimental man, this does take me back to that first book. And, you know, all my books since have had an element of travel. And I think it's probably because there was a lack of travel in my childhood,
right,
that's the way I've gone. And that first book did all right. And that was the gateway to doing another eight so far.
And the Smiths are kind of the sort of chimera of an elephant in the room of your new book, really, of the C86 kids, in that they're the ones who sort of got away and they were on Top of the Pops. And that sort of guitar sound, that kind of introspective thing, really does sort of hang over the ones who didn't quite make that impact, surely.
Absolutely. You know, I think everyone sees that, oh, the Smiths can do it. And the Smiths were a couple of years ahead of these other bands. And, you know, they're on Top of the Pops by late 83, early 84. That you could do it. And they were on an independent label. They're on Rough Trade at the time. And they're having top 10 hits. And so lots of bands probably thought, oh, look, we don't have to compromise our values. We don't have to wear Dayglo snoods or whatever and you have highlights in our hair in order to actually have that success and play music that's credible and that the cool kids like as well, you know. And a lot of these bands they appeared on kids' telly at the time.
Yes.
You know, on the Wide Awake Club and on Hold Tight, the old ITV kids show. For them, there was no difficulty with being kind of a John Peel late night favourite, but also, you know, playing in front of a load of kids at Alton Towers on Hold Tight.
Some of these, I mean, it's kind of telling that you call them the C86 kids, because some of them kind of held on to childhood in a way. There was some of the, I know that a lot of musicians didn't like it, but there was often a bit of a fey, slightly sort of childish feel about them. Even the names
Yes, you know, the kind of second wave that came after. So C86 became a kind of subgenre itself of indie music, or even the point at which indie music itself was defined. And as soon as you've put a date on a scene, it's outdated straight away. So it was a straitjacket for a lot of people who, you know, took a long time to kind of escape its kind of negative connotations, because as much as it was current and popular, it soon went out of favour just as quick as it had arrived. And so a lot of them were kind of left in limbo. And, you know, there was a second wave of, you know, wearing hair slides, lots of cardigans, you know.
Yes, cardigans.
Not quite flowers in the hair, but, you know, getting that way. You know, the names like the Jasmine Minx and stuff like that. You know, this wasn't punk. This was very much the punk's, you know, softer, gentler, younger brothers and sisters. There's 30 or so people in the book. All happy to kind of... And I always went to go and see them on their home territory, what they do now as well, as much as possible.
Yes, I think that's the interesting bit, in a way, when you those are the bits that I enjoyed most, when you sort of revealed how they earn a crust, really.
Exactly, you know, how they... I'm always interested far more on the descent. If a band's had its peak, it's the descent, and what they do is they come down the mountain rather than on their way up, their way up.
And someone's already written that first bit anyway, so...
Yes, exactly. So, yes, I went in search of them now and had lots of fun doing it.
Brilliant. Very good. Now, I think we're going to stick with ambitious young men playing music. Gail, what's the first card that you've got on your doormat?
Well, this is a Beatles postcard.
Oh,
and
good.
As you can see, I will read the back of it. It is pristine at the back, but I will read what was printed. One of Ringo's first appearances with the Beatles at the Cavern Club, Matthew Street, Liverpool, 1962. Now, this is a special card to me because I only just realised I had it.
Right.
And also, I have a lot of Beatle things left over from my fan days, just as well, because I'm writing a new Beatles book and that's going to be in it as well.
Good.
But... This was only sent as part of the things to members of the British Beatles fan club.
Right.
Now, this is where as I said, I grew up in Montreal, and there was a Canadian Beatles fan club, which, nothing personal, was rubbish. You paid your money, you got your card, and that was your lot.
Oh, really?
And I heard of all these fantastic things, because the Beatles were very generous to their British fans, including... At Christmas, they recorded a Christmas flexi disc.
Of course, yes. For many years.
Yep. And I thought, I want this. And fortunately, I have a cousin living in London.
Good work.
And even at the age of 11, I had the sense of mind to ask her to join the fan club for me.
On your behalf?
Yes. So my behalf, her address.
Yes, very good.
So everything got sent to her and she very kindly passed it along. And I hope I've been grateful ever since.
So you would get packages in Montreal that had come from, I guess, the London office to your cousin who was where?
Yep. Who was in London.
In London and then out to you.
Yep. And it was fantastic because I have a set, which I, again, I'm only discovering, it's my game, What's in the House. I've got, I think, the complete set of the Beatles Christmas Flexi Discs in perfect condition because I was one of those kids, and probably still are, that took care of my things.
Yeah, yeah.
So this postcard is one of that, and there was a set of them. But so it symbolizes to me that I was good at getting around rules very early on in life. But also...
Yeah, that's the producer in you, definitely.
I think that was just the fan as well.
Yeah. If you want it, you'll make it happen.
Well, that's it. I think the US Marines have an expression, see the hill, take the hill.
Okay.
And that, I think...
That wasn't referring to fan club records, though, was it?
But I think that's been my rule in life, that actually, and this sounds heavy now, but when I was at the bed in, Timothy Leary was there. And everyone was very, very nice to me, and we had a lot of time because it was 8 days in a hotel room or suite. And he said, which was very 60s, Leary said, you know, you can do anything you want because you are divine. I think he meant in the universal sense of divinity.
Yes.
But there was a feeling in the 60s growing up that you could do anything. So, you know, and nothing personal, Montreal was a bit boring. Aside from bombs, which came.
Yeah.
So I fell in love with the Beatles. I first heard them when I was 10. And it was like, I mean, it's everything they said. The world changed from black and white to Technicolor. The lights went on because I had an older brother who had listened to Bobby V and Bobby Rydell and all that sort of thing. And I thought, okay, but is that it?
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Didn't connect.
No. And when I first heard the Beatles, I went, what is this? Even at that tender age. And it was before they broke on Ed Sullivan and all the rest.
Right.
And thanks to my wonderful cousin, she had sent me one of the first Love Me Do EP.
Wow.
And
so you were ahead of the game in your community.
Very much. She also sent me a Cliff Richard EP. And no disrespect to Cliff. But he didn't do it for me.
The bigger name at the time, I'd have thought.
Yes, and she probably preferred him.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, he was old. To me, he seemed old by then.
Yeah, yeah.
Because also looking at the postcard of the Beatles, one always has to remember how young they were.
Yeah, yeah.
Because at this point, George was probably, 19? Paul was 20? The others were 21?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this is about just before... You know, Love Me Do hit.
It's the confidence of youth, isn't it? You can see it.
Well, they'd spent a couple of years going back and forth to Hamburg and playing Every Hour God Sends.
So they were blooded in that sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was not a manufactured boy band.
No.
These were, I mean, if you saw McCartney do his gig at Glastonbury this year, 3 hours never mind without a stop, without a loo break, without a zip of water. I couldn't have done that.
No, I couldn't do it watching it. So.
No. So
on television, I might add.
Yes. So the Beatles were always very, very special to me. And it's a nice souvenir to have for all the reasons. And it's pristine on the back still.
And this was an exclusive for the fan club, this postcard.
Yes. There was one of three.
Wow.
But this one, I thought, showed it. And also, it's nice because if you notice, Ringo's drums have... It says on his drums, it's a very jerry-made, somebody wrote or used sticky tape to put Ringo Starr.
Ringo Starr with a blob instead of the O.
Yes.
Yes. The branding isn't complete yet.
No. And they're in the cabin. They don't have their suits.
No,
so
they're sweaty.
And it's not long.
And John's kind of making some joke to Ringo. It's back of his head, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a very candid shot. It's not a press shot in a proper sense.
No. I mean, there was no press then. It would have been, whether... It would have been Brian by then because they're actually dressing alike.
Yeah, they've got the outfit, haven't they?
But no jackets. But have you ever been in the cavern?
I haven't. Well, is it genuinely still there?
No. It's the cavern. It's
sort of rebuilt, isn't it?
It's You Can't Believe It's Not the Cavern.
Okay.
The cavern is now, the original cavern is now part of the Mersey Tunnel for the train, for Mersey trains. But over the road is another dank cellar.
Right. That'll do.
And you really do, I do recommend going to it because you get the atmosphere. But also, it was, I think Epstein described it as a cellar full of noise.
Exactly.
And sweat.
Yes, yes.
And that's exactly what it is. But the energy that these four had must have bounced off the walls.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not long before Ringo got his Ludwig drums that said the Beatles, and they were in their matching suits. But they have the Beatle haircut. Well, Ringo doesn't have the Beatle haircut yet.
But he's got a very odd haircut. A lot of hair, basically.
Basically, I think he didn't have a haircut.
No.
If
he had a quiff, it's collapsed.
Yes.
Maybe that's the sweat.
Yeah. They're on the edge
of
who they became.
Transitional moment.
Yeah, which is...
One thing I noticed as well, you've got Paul, you've got George, you've got John, all in their waistcoats.
Yes.
Now, because of the way that Paul and George are in this picture, you can't see Ringo's arms.
No.
So you can't see the white shirt. So it almost looks like he's wearing a dark school jumper.
Yes.
With that haircut, he's got his tie is so far down, it's cut at least one or two buttons of his shirt undone. And the fact that he's got his drum kit with his own name, it looks like he's just been, oh, our drummer's gone away. Oh, I've got some drums. And he's run home from school, brought them in. Because he looks really unfeasible. I mean, they all look unfeasibly young. But just the way that how they're standing on stage, it makes it look as though he's not part of the front three. He's an interloper who's just kind of appeared.
You're very right, because it would have been around this time that they were recording Love Me Do. And I sound so nerdy that I know all this, but I've just been researching again from the book. It was still Pete Best when they recorded Love Me Do until they realised this isn't working. So Ringo really was brought in quickly, and
they leave Ringo off the recording in the end anyway. They got something like a session guy in, I think.
Yep, but he was in the other, he was in the B side and the other things. But they did say the moment they played with Ringo, because he's such an incredible drummer, that they knew it was right. That they all came. That's when they became the Beatles. So it's nice to have the moment before.
It's fantastic. Now, for people who don't know, just very briefly, I think you've just got to outline for us how you ended up spending eight days with John Lennon, because this is not a normal thing to happen to people.
No. Well, as I said, I grew up in Montreal, and I heard on the radio John and Yoko had come to Montreal. And my first thought was, why? Voluntarily?
69?
Yes. Yeah. And because not a lot happened in Montreal. And I thought, I knew where they were staying in a hotel downtown, and I thought, Montreal isn't that big, run downtown, grab a bus, and just have a look. Maybe I could catch a glimpse of them. And of course, already the fans were surrounding the hotel, and I thought, no chance. And then what they very helpfully did was they put a sheet outside their window with Love and Peace or something.
Oh, like a demo kind of thing, like a protest sort of sign.
Yep. So I could see, I could count, and I could count how many floors up they were. And sneaking into the hotel and dodging, got onto their floor, waited for the guard to go for a sec, knocked on the door, and Yoko answered.
Because that's the miracle.
Yes,
so many people would have wanted to do it, but that's the bit where you actually made it happen.
It was, I still don't believe it. And and Yoko answered, and I just quickly, can I have an interview for my school paper? And to my greater surprise, she said, yes, come in.
Wow.
And greater still was, I was standing with John Lennon. And you go, okay. But we hit it off right away. John and I shared a sense of humour, which was lovely. And also he was starving and I had a chocolate bar. so that's
a good reporter's trick, isn't it?
It is. In Canada, you don't go out. My handbag still is packed for every eventuality in case of blizzard.
Right.
We hit it off and we did the interview, which was the best interview my school paper ever got.
I bet it was.
Better than the hockey team. not to hockey lovers. And, we got to talking, and it's a long story, but it ended with them asking if I wanted to stay for all 8 days to help out.
Amazing. Just one of those things that you can't ever imagine happening.
No, but with my mother's permission, obviously.
Good.
Yeah, front row seat to rock history. Just to be there and be taken seriously as a 16-year-old and as a woman, because I was still a girl. And they were, you know, they were all of them. It was a great time. I was very lucky.
And they were as supportive as you would have hoped.
Yes, totally.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and we stayed in touch after as well. So,
very good.
I learned so much from John that I still use.
Brilliant.
Yep, even just in that, because I was chair of the Writers Guild of Great Britain, and now I'm treasurer. I finally found out where the money is. But, you know, organising, John taught, the Bedin was all about organisation and marshalling troops.
Well, I was thinking about it the other day, having read your book, I was thinking that... people are very interested at the moment about how you work with the media, how you create events, how you make things happen, how you gain attention. I was thinking of that the stunt that Joe Lycett was doing recently. It's just interesting how you kind of try and capture the moment or catch people's imagination. And I think if you were writing the history of PR events or protest events or events that capture... Lennon has a chapter for himself, I think.
Definitely. He was the Don Draper of the 60s as well. But it was all carefully worked out. John was a genius, and people don't give him credit. He didn't just... People go, they were lying in a bed for all 8 days. It was all worked out.
It sounds hellish from the book. Is that by the end? It sounds really quite
It got
stressful.
Yes, it was, which is why I didn't, you know... I thought, this is fine, but... I'm going now.
Yeah, the tranquility kind of just disappeared as the week went by.
I'll go back to my life. But it worked. The whole thing was, it worked. They had a march on Washington. There was a huge peace march on Washington in December of that year with 500,000 people singing Give Peace a Chance.
Yeah, create an anthem. That's a trick, isn't it? That's a big part of it.
Well, that's what John wanted to do. He said he wanted to create an anthem that would last for all times.
Yeah.
And he did. And that's part of my thank you, is to keep his message, you know, John and Yoko's peace message out there, and also remind people about why it was done and his anthem.
Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, look, there's far too much to talk about that book in this podcast. I would say, if you want to hear, to understand... Gail's story, get the book, Give Me a Chance, because she takes it through in a very straightforward way, through the eyes of this young teenager, as this kaleidoscope of events unfolds in front of her, with Lennon, Ono, Timothy Leary, Allen Ginsberg, all Petula Clark, all kinds of people turning up. I recommend it. Right, one more quick card from me. This is... a black and white card. Are we going from the sublime to the ridiculous? But I'm not afraid to do that. This has a nice decal edge, you know, and the edge is all waffly and in and out like a wave. It's a nice image of Bournemouth. It says the Pier Approach and Bay, Bournemouth, black and white card, 1959. You're going back a while. Sent to Ilford in Essex. And... it was written by someone called Margaret, and she's writing to the girls. Now, I think the girls might be at school or there's some school friends. My eyes always light up when I see cards written by teenage girls or young girls to their friends, because they're always the sort of cheekiest ones. Boys at that age didn't send postcards, so I don't see them. But the girls, you always get something sort of playful and then sort of muck about a bit. So she says, the weather has changed for the better, and I've caught the sun quite a bit. My back, arms and face are covered in small sun blisters. So what we would now call serious sunburn, but anyway, she called it sun blisters. She says, I managed to cover those up on my face with makeup. My poor feet itch all the time, as they also have caught the sun. And all I do is scratch, 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 scratch. Sheila M., as you know, I said I'd phone you on Sunday morning, but it may be about 2 after dinner. If this doesn't suit you, write here and tell me. As in the morning, I must have a bath and wash my hair as I'm going out after dinner. So there you are, Margaret, filling in the girls on every bit of her skin complaints and her plans for the day.
It's quite nice that she scheduled her bath.
Yeah, yeah, I do that. I can't see you next month. I'm having a bath.
So many days in advance, it's amazing.
Yeah, well, it may be if she's in a guest house, she may have had to book it, actually. Can I have a bath tomorrow morning? I don't know.
Yeah.
But also washing one's hair, especially, you know, if one had long hair or, in her case, had to set her hair in the 50s.
Maybe.
That was a big deal to set it and dry it. So good luck. I hope her sun... I was going to say I hope her sunburn... It sounded carcinogenic, so I hope she survived.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I do find on these old cards that sunburn and suntan are used interchangeably. People nowadays, we're very convinced sunburn is a really bad thing. We think suntan is quite a bad thing. But they just say, well, I'm hoping I'll sunburn. I thought, no, you're not. It's horrible if you get burned. Anyway.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
You're listening to Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. My guests today are Nige Tassel and Gail Renard. Now, here's a surprise. We've received a postcard. It's a picture of the oldest chemist shop in England. Who knew there was a chart of the second oldest, third oldest? Anyway, this is the oldest chemist shop in England, which is in Knaresborough. And this card says, the mystery voice was the voice of Douglas Fairbanks Jr. He said in this interview, when he was asked if he had wanted to follow in his father's footsteps as an actor. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Wall, that's the wrong answer.
Aww.
On with the postcard stories. Now, Nige, what's the second card you got for us today? I can smell fish.
yes. If this was a scratch and sniff postcard, it wouldn't be that pleasant.
Oh, if only, if only.
Again, this is no message on the back. Again, bought by me for a bit of wall art, blue tack remnants on the back. This is a lovely black and white shot of a street view in New Orleans, place I've been visited several times and loved intensely, of the Broadview Seafood outlet. Which boasts boiled crayfish, live crayfish, fresh shrimp, fish and crab. It's a particularly sunny day and there's a couple of people outside, short sleeves, hats on. I don't know whether these are the proprietors or they just happen to be visitors.
They're proprietorial.
They're certainly proprietorial, but I'd imagine they'd have aprons or overalls or, you know, and some sort of fish guts all down them.
Maybe they're the best customers.
They did look very well turned out. I mean, the guy on the left, his T-shirt's particularly pristine and white. Might be the start of the day before they've got into the fishy business. And this is a picture taken by a New Orleans photographer called Kerry McCafferty.
Oh, yeah.
And I bought a whole load of hers last time I was there. So, again, these have adorned off various office walls over the years. And And I've done a little bit of detective work online.
Oh, go on.
And this particular Broadview Seafood still exists. It is still in exactly the same place. Oh. This is a shot taken in 1993.
Right.
It's in the 7th Ward in New Orleans. So it's a few miles north of downtown in the Gentilly neighbourhood. And I've kind of worked out what it is. I mean, Kerry seemed to take lots of pictures of street. I mean, New Orleans is a dream for photographers because so much is happening. So if you're a documentary photographer, a photojournalist, you're there taking pictures and obviously then realise, hold on, I could sell these. And so I think what she's done... Now, its location, this particular establishment, is just a few blocks from the fairgrounds race course in New Orleans. Now, I know of this not for horse racing, but because every year, over two weekends, it's the scene of the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Fair, which has loads and it was especially big in the late 70s, in the 70s and 80s, where every musician in New Orleans would play. There'd be loads of stages.
Oh, really?
And they would be, you know, pretty primitive affairs, you know, a little bit of scaffolding, some planks. So everyone is really close to it. So the photography of that particular event is astonishing because you get, especially the sort of stuff in the 70s, you get these very era-specific people in the crowd who are right there. You know, there's no security guards and then a pit and then a barrier and, you know, the front row is 50 yards away. Everyone is right in the thick of it and the photographers seem to have free reign to just get on stage and take pictures of people like, you know, Professor Longhair or the Neville Brothers, or loads of Cajun and Zydeco bands.
Nice music.
Now, I think Kerry is en route there when she's taken this picture because it's just a few blocks away. It's not a neighbourhood you would go to.
Oh, I see.
To go and take some pictures. You would say around the French Quarter if you wanted to take some tasty pictures to stick on a postcard to sell to tourists. So I think she's just walked along here, seen these two guys outside, possibly having a smoke before they get stuck into the fish guts, just taking their picture. They've probably thought nothing more of it. She's looked back at her negatives in the dark room. Oh, yeah, this could make a good photo, good postcard. Sold it. And then, you know, 30 years later, three people are talking on a thing called a podcast. Who knows whether these guys are still with us? Who knows whether, you know... other than this quick 5-second shot as Kerry then walked on up to go and see all the music, would be there in my hand in rural Somerset 30 years later.
Frozen in time. The fish, the shrimp was fresh and the picture is frozen.
The only sad thing is it says boiled crab and live... Is it boiled crab and live crab?
Live crayfish.
Oh, crayfish. Because if you're a literate crayfish, you knew what was coming.
Yes.
And that's sad.
You look across the kitchen and go, oh, if that's the noise crayfish make.
Aww. And shrimp is what we'd call prawn, isn't it? Because it's bigger.
Yes, that's right.
But crayfish is crayfish. It's a big thing.
Now, this is particular. I mean, there is a little bit of personal significance to this because I bought this when me and my wife went there in 1996, sort of 3 weeks, big three-week trip to New Orleans and southern Louisiana. You know, this is, you know, pre-kids, when mortgages were low and you had a thing called disposable income. Amazing. And this was the occasion that I last ate any flesh.
Oh, I see. Basically. Oh, well, so you were put off by the live crayfish sign.
I wasn't put off. Jane's been vegetarian for a long time before that, since she was a kid. We'd always eaten vegetarian, but I said, look, I'll give it up once I've gone and had another Cajun chicken poor boy sandwich, which I did. I remember that last one. Oh. And then in the, now 26 years later, yes, no crayfish, boiled or live, has passed my lips.
Very good, very good. Well, I think you've got a sort of memorial then here.
Absolutely, yeah. What could have been? But, you know, I've never been one for seafood, and I wouldn't like the smell of that place, I have to say. It's not alluring. The fruits of the sea.
Yes,
for me, thanks, no.
Oh, well, I think it's a nice card, and it's a particular genre, the sort of art photograph card. So it's still a tourist postcard, clearly for visitors like you, but it also has a kind of consciously artistic feel to it.
Yeah, you know, and it's good. You know, if you buy a postcard of a place, you know, you'll know it's a beach or it's quartered and there's various different shots from a particular town or city. So I just love this snapshot and the fact it's got people in it as well. You know, it's not somewhere tourists would go.
No.
You know, it's not a quaint French Quarter townhouse. It's just a rough wooden building. It's got a bit of a balcony there, but it's adorned, you know, it's got paint, all their menu is effectively in large white paint on their windows. You know, it's
signage
not
is definitely
it's
functional, isn't it?
It's functional is everything about this. You know, it's alluring. If you're just hungry and you like the word crayfish about 3 foot high, then this place is for you.
Well, I'm a great believer in clarity in advertising. I think that's a good thing. You know.
Absolutely.
Don't muck about. Keep it simple. What's the product? Tell me what the product is. There it is. Very good. So, Gail, what's the final postcard you've got for us? I recognise this woman.
Yes, it's a photo of... It's a postcard of the Queen from the mid-70s. And lovely though the postcard is, this postcard has been driving me crazy ever since then.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yes, and this has brought it all up again, just as I managed to forget. Now, it's a postcard... that was postmarked from London, WC, so centre of London, at 9:15 p.m., which might or might not be a clue.
Okay.
And I have no idea. This is obviously from someone who's known me well, but it's anonymous. I can read it out. Dear Miss Renard, we were delighted to hear that you're going to give us more jolly doctors. Make them public school wallers if you can. We had a word with Humph, you know. So did Phil. So happy that a colonial is doing so jolly well. Tally-ho, old sport. From your own, your very own, love to you, friend. Now, I have no idea. I have clues.
Did you know at the time?
No. Never know.
You didn't even know then?
No. And this wasn't
this
long...
This could be a police matter.
It wasn't long since... I mean, I was in Britain. I was very, very lucky because one of the first things I wrote was... I got on, when I was 20, to the London Weekend Doctor series. The Doctor...
Okay.
That had started as Doctor in Charge, and I joined it... Oh, Doctor in the House, and I joined it...
Right,
...by Doctor in Charge.
Yes.
Now, this person... And so I had a group of friends, and also, she said, name-dropping, I was in a performance... I would write a performance group, review group with Douglas Adams.
Okay,
and
two
other lovely chaps. And I thought... This narrows it down to my flatmate, who was an actress,
right,
to the people in the three guys in my review group. I was close to the Monty Pythons, and it was process of elimination. It is not the handwriting of any of the Pythons, because
no.
I knew that I have postcards from them, knew it well. I thought it might be someone from the review side, and I can never find out. And I showed it to friends, and I was meeting with one of the chaps from the review group. Dear friend, we were having lunch, and I just found the card again, and I thought, I will take it along. I will catch him.
Yeah. Finally.
Yes. And over lunch, I passed him the card, hoping to see a glimmer in his eye that went, ah. And I said, do you recognize this? And he went, no, and went on eating.
Oh.
And I thought... And it's driving me. They knew my address. They'd obviously been to the house, my old address, because they had the name of the house as well as the address.
Nice writing.
It is. They knew about Humph, who was Humphrey Barclay, who was the producer of Doctor.
Right, right.
They knew about Phil, which is my friend Phil Redmond.
Okay.
Who I wrote the pilot of the Doctor at Sea series with.
Right.
So there are lots of... It's not Phil's handwriting. Postmarked... Middle of London at 9:15. Now, had it been my flatmate, Malud, Christine was in a... She was in a little night music. But at 9:15, she would have been on stage. Or even... Oh. There would have been...
Oh, but it would only be... You wouldn't...
It would
could
be
still
stamped.
Have gone to the letterbox at that time.
Yes. No, but she was never that organised, and she never bought a stamp in her life, so she would have had to ask me for one.
It sounds like a writer to me, the mucking about bit of it. It feels like someone's mucking about.
But it's driven me crazy that I still, after all these years, I am putting it in my next book because maybe someone will recognise it.
Yeah.
I even thought, let me double-check Douglas's handwriting,
yes,
which is easy to do because he signed so many things,
yes.
And go... It's not Douglas.
No.
So, and I don't know, it was probably too much energy for Douglas. God bless him. So it's you can see it bothers me.
Well, it's not an actor, because he's saying make 'em public school wallers.
Yes.
So there's an actor who could play the public school part. And if you make them public, he might get a part.
I didn't. Mm. Yeah,
actor comedian. Huh?
I didn't really. Yeah, I associate. It sounds terrible. We were comedy writer performers, but yeah. Not actors.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
So, if anybody, if that rings a bell, or if you want to confess, please get in touch with Tom.
Well, exactly. Now, people can absolutely get in touch via the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, and send me the information, and then I will sell that information to Gail at a large fee. It seems to be very fair to me.
So yes, it seems fair.
There's no reason why we can't make that work. Well, it intrigues me because I spend a lot of time going through boxes of old cards where I have no idea who's written them. I have clues. I normally know who they're sent to because there's an address on, but don't really know who they're from. But that's because they've come to me via a circuitous route. They've been at people's attics. They've found their way into cardboard boxes and found their way to me. No wonder they've sort of had their provenance fallen off them over time. But this has come straight to you, and it's a mystery from the word go.
And I've never known, and showed it to friends and all the rest, and still it will continue to drive me crazy.
I feel like I've sort of got unfinished business today now, because everything else, Nige, in his classically nicely written style, has tied everything up with a bow, it made perfect sense, I understood the story, and you leave me with this dangling,
Life is never neat, Tom.
No. But you didn't have to come here and remind me of that. Well, no, I love it. I love a mystery. Mysteries are better than solutions normally, so I think that's very good. And especially as, the Beatles stuff is such a perfect story that is crystallised in the past, and then you leave this as a vibrating confusion. Very good. Thank you. Thank you both. And thank you both. Thank you, Nige. Thank you, Gail, for these cards, because you've done your homework. You've prepared something for us, for the listeners. It's really kind of you. I said the same thing. I never know where the cards will send us. Another quick reminder for listeners at home, you can see these cards. And I think in Gail's case, we might get the message side as well.
Yeah.
On the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk. Now, before we let Gail out of the studio and Nige back to his writing room, we normally end the show with one of these. Gail's in the studio, so she gets to see it. Here, have a look at this one.
Ah. Oh.
So if you could tell us, tell the listener what you've got there.
It's it's German. It's a phonoscope, which is, in French, la carte musicale, or die Tundelin Ausschnitt card, which is basically a record card that you could put on your gramophone in this case. And it's, oh my, this, I would love to hear this. It's disc normal. 45 tours, Alexander's Ragtime Band.
I don't think it's very disc normal, but anyway, it says no. It's disc normal.
Oh, this is wonderful. Where did you find it?
Oh, well, I couldn't possibly reveal that. It was sent to me by an anonymous person, possibly Douglas Adams. Well, young Tom next door has worked hard with this, and I think he's created a digital version.
Wow.
Which, if we listen carefully, we may be able to hear what this piece of cardboard sounds like. Crackly, mainly. There you go.
Brilliant.
It's not bad, is it?
That's much better than I thought a postcard would be.
I think it's good for a piece of cardboard. Mm. I mean, it's shiny cardboard, but...
But not as good as a Beatles Flexidisc.
No, and not a million miles away in terms of the technology. And in fact, Flexidisc...
It's a forebearer of the C86 cassette as well.
There you go, there you go. Nicely played.
Now go find the people who did it, Nige.
Yeah, well, I do know that the people on these records are always anonymous, the performers. They don't seem to... I don't think it was a great part of your career to record stuff for a postcard, to be honest. But you don't get a credit like you got on your crayfish postcard of the photographer.
Yeah. Audible postcards, though, that's the future,
yeah,
surely.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Terrific.
We could call them phone calls. No, hang on. Well, there we go. As the lake and the pre-Alps at Lugano continue to rotate at exactly 45 RPM, that's it on this time for Podcasts from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first-class guests for sharing the postcards from their pasts, Nige Tassel and Gail Renard. Thank you both.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. Thank you. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me, at Past Postcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardourstudios.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.